go. There we go. And all right, we're good to go. I'm going to give a countdown and we'll kick it off. Just the two of us. We can make it if we... whatever that is. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Jack Show!
Who's the best show here?
Jack Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
I am short.
Bingo! Showtime!
That's kind of fucking weird, but okay.
When you were making it pretty young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll make it bad. For the stream link, go to DLNGS.org. And IC challenge LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1006 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
How's it going, Dan?
Yeah, it's going. It's just Pat and I. Everybody else got something coming up, work or whatever. Anyway, it's we're giving you the best of the best today. So let's have at it. So this is a follow-up to my project at work for the identity management, workload identity management stuff. And I ran into an interesting problem this week for the next application that I wanted to move over. And that was – I chose that application largely because of the challenge – that presented itself to running two different applications locally for testing purposes. And the reason why that is a challenge is that, well, first off, most of our Node applications run on port 3000. So the way that it works when it's in the container, Nginx is used as the proxy, which takes all the requests and passes them back to the application that is running on port 3000. So you can't run two applications on the same port, obviously, but it's really simple to just change the port that the application is listening on. And so the second application in this case, all our applications we have for local development run on a different port. The main application, which was our discovery application, which is like the navigation part of the CMS, is running on port 3000. This application, which handles creating lists, it runs on port 3004 if you're doing it locally. So that one problem is handled. But prior to moving over to workload identity, what would happen is that we were following some of Google's recommended application default credentials implementations. That what happens is you take the service account and the service account credentials, which is a JSON object. One of the ways that you can handle authentication is to take that JSON object and then have it somewhere in a file on the system, and you point the environmental variable, which is Google application credentials, I believe it is, Google application credentials, points to that file. So then when you run the application, the library looks to see if that environmental variable is set. If it doesn't have authentication through any other way, it looks to see if that's set, and then we'll look at that object, the file for that object, and get that information. So what happened in the past was that object, JSON object, was stored in the vault as a secret, it would run the Node Vault utility, pull that secret down, and the application would just write it to a file inside of the inside of the container somewhere, and then it would that would be created as the environmental variable pointing to that. With workload identity, it doesn't need to do that, so we don't need to pull the credentials from the vault. The credentials are linked inside of the container through Kubernetes, through kind of like impersonation. But in local development, it's the same thing. So long as your own personal account that you have initialized with Google, you have the ability to impersonate whatever service account that you're going to run as. You have to set that permission. When you use gCloud to authenticate and tell it to use application default and then to use impersonation, and this is the account that you impersonate, that's not a similar thing to using the environmental variable pointing to the file. Once that is created, it's kind of like that. You could set the Google application default credentials to point to that file, and it should work, which is kind of what has to be done when you want to run the applications side by side. And what happens is then, and this is the only other way I can find around this. It's a little bit ugly, but I set up all the scripts to handle that if you want it to run multi. Is the first application that you want to run, you essentially start up authentication and impersonation with that application. You copy that credential file out into another location and then point that environmental variable to that location and start the application. Then in another terminal, you can run the second application by authenticating and impersonating that account. And that'll look at the actual original location where the credentials are stored. You don't have to make any other additional changes. And that's how you can run multiple applications side by side. I could not find any other way to do that. And so that was one problem solved right there, testing that out. But the other problem that we had was the first application I did only needed to communicate with Google Storage. This application, on the other hand, was doing both Google Storage and Google Tasks. So there was an extra layer of libraries in there for creating Google Tasks. So the way that this kind of works is you can create a gallery type list and then schedule it to be released. And that scheduling, what it does is when you schedule that, it sends the payload to Google Cloud Schedule. And that schedule then is kind of a holding area that when that task reaches the date and time it's supposed to be released, it then pushes a message back to the application saying it's ready to go, and then it gets published. So what had been done to facilitate that is an authenticated HTTP request through the scheduler. So it has to generate an OIDC or OAuth2 token that is included in the headers. And then when the scheduler pushes back that message or the payload to the application, it grabs that token in the header and verifies that. So what had been done originally to create that token was it used the email of the service account and the client ID, which were readily available in the JSON object. So you need the email address, which is essentially the service account, okay? So the service account, what happens in that case is when the task is created, you need to give it the service account that it's going to run as when it runs, when it sends it back to the application. So it could be any valid service account, but in this case we were using the application service account and email address. And then the other object, the validation, was the client ID, and that's called the audience. And that both of these, so this, the second value, the client ID, is a string, and it has to be like the string that you use to create the OIDC token. You have to then also have that string to validate the OIDC token. So client ID was used because that's in the service account credentials. So they were using those two things. Now, the problem that I ran into with this is that with both the workload identity and local identity impersonation, I can't get that information to the Google authentication libraries. there seems to be some commands or functions that would kind of indicate you should be able to get them. One was called get credentials. Another one was called get application default credentials. And what it basically turned out is that the library is essentially used, obviously, for authenticating to Google services. It's not something that you should be using to get the authentication information to make it accessible in that way to the application, like running it. Like, it's not, there doesn't seem to be a way to reliably get like the service account email address or the client ID of the service account. We tried a whole bunch of different things. It wasn't working, especially with account impersonation. What we got back in the object from the Google application default credentials was incredibly different than running in the container than it was in local impersonation. So there was no reliable way to get those two values that we wanted. And since basically you could use any service account email address, provided it has the right permissions, and you can use any audience value, which we were using a client ID, I just took those two values that we were using and stuck them in Google Secrets and pulled them out of Google Secrets. And that worked perfectly. Initially I didn't like it because I felt it was kind of lazy and sloppy, and if we ever did change the service account, we would have to make sure, I thought we would have to make sure to change those values. But given the fact that we're probably never going to change the service account, if for some reason there could have been an exposure, we could just change the service account credentials. The email address is always going to be the same. And that other thing, the client ID, really is arbitrary. It's a string. So it doesn't matter. It's not really used for anything other than, you know, we're passing it in originally to create the token, and then we're validating that those values, when put together, create that same token on the other side of it. So that worked out just fine. We were happy with that. And on other news, which was quite frustrating, is that we WordPress released 6.1 months ago. Right now, the current version of WordPress is 6.2.2. We were still on 6.0. We wanted to go to 6.1. We ran into, so I was primarily leading that, and we, I was testing, and I think, maybe I mentioned this, I don't know, but given the way that we run this application, the CMS, the block editor introduced a new element called list item with the list, and because we are very restrictive, we're only running WordPress for the block editor. We're not using any other WordPress stuff. We have it completely customized. We only allow certain elements. One of those, you know, was a block editor. Everything else is blocked in there. So we allowed the list block, but we didn't, with the introduction of the list item element inside of WordPress 6.1, when we went to go use that, it was something I didn't test, and the other person who was checking behind me didn't test, because it was a standard part of WordPress. We didn't even think that that would have been a problem. We were testing all our customizations, but when you go to create a list, you can create the first item in the list. You cannot create any other items because we restricted, had by default restricted the list item. So that was one issue. That was really easy to fix. The other issue that was not so easy to fix was they drastically changed their calendar widget, and all the classes that we were modifying or putting styles on and some of the functionality completely changed. So the calendar looked atrocious when it was implemented in our customizations, and we were able to get it all the way to the point of looking closer to how it should, how it worked previously. It was a lot of work, and this is stuff I really never, I don't do on a regular basis, and I've really never done before, but it was a lot of going into the developer tools and inspecting all the objects to get the classes and see what changes and what doesn't when you manipulate stuff, and then putting those changes into the CSS styles to override that, or into the JavaScript to set it. And one of the things that they did was they implemented, oh gosh, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but to the essential, the fact is, if you change in the calendar, so you have typically, if you're familiar with a web-based calendar pop-up kind of thing, date, time, it's like you got a little field there which allows you to put in the date and time, but if you click on it, it might pop open a calendar widget where you have like a block that says, like an input area for the hour and an input area for the minute, and then an AM PM toggle, and then the calendar below that, which has, you know, the month view with all the dates, and then you can switch back and forth between the months, and you can go to different years and stuff like that, and then click on the day. So what ended up they implemented in this was an event that any time that you would click on anything in the calendar, or if you would update, like you would change the hour and move out of the hour input block, it would fire the event, and we were using it as a popover to the interface. And what ends up happening is anytime that you would make a change, it would close the calendar. So you would change it from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, it would close the calendar. Then you'd have to open it back up to change the minute. And if you pressed, AM or PM, it would close the calendar. And then if you click the date, close the calendar. And it was a kind of a bug that was identified months ago. But as of today, and they're on 6.2.2, and this is the Gutenberg block editor, 15.5, this is the release, either 3 or 5, still has not been fixed. Many people have complained about it. But working with two team members who are far better at this stuff than I am, using the inspector on the developer tools, we're able to drill down into that thing, find out what it needs to be done in the classes, and override that in the JavaScript, in our JavaScript, so we didn't have to muck around with the actual code from the block editor, because then, you know, you can't really do that. You can't muck with the WordPress base code, because then if you needed to, you would actually have to fork it and then a whole customized version of the block editor or WordPress and manage that. And we don't want to do that. But we were able to get it to the point.
I haven't used WordPress in years. It's been forever.
It's not bad. I don't want to say it's bad. I think what we're doing to it makes it extremely challenging. It's like, obviously you know what WordPress is. It's like essentially we're taking just the Gutenberg block editor from WordPress and throwing everything else out. So it's kind of crazy. The thought was, or is, that it's a well-established framework that we don't have to maintain, but we could build upon, and instead of having to create that framework or all that underpinnings ourselves, take advantage of that. And it works really great, but it can be a real tough cookie to crack, you know, to get all these things to work together. But anyway, that's that. We're done with that. I'm done with talking about work. What's up with you, Pat?
I had my gig this past week on Friday. It was at this place called Famous Reading Outdoors in Pottsville, PA. Now, I've heard horror stories about Pottsville. I don't know about you. I was expecting to see, like, you know, Appalachia, people walking around barefoot, kind of. You know, it's some people call it the meth capital of hillbilly PA. I was pleasantly surprised. It was actually a lot nicer, Pottsville. It kind of reminded me of Scranton a little bit, except a little smaller.
If I'm not mistaken, now, and I could be wrong, because I get Pottsville mixed up with Pottstown.
Yeah, Pottsville is, if you go, it's over, you know where Hamburg is, off of 78?
Yeah.
That's where the Cabela's is. Well, you get off over there and you go north about half an hour. It's up there.
Because I had one of my college friends was into modding his car and and so I can't remember if it was Pottsville or Pottstown that he would always go out to on a Friday and a Saturday night, like once or twice a month. And it would just be, they would just have lines of like cars just parading around this strip and, you know, blasting their stereos and stuff, which I wonder if it was Pottsville because that's where the racing was.
Well, this place is in this place called Famous Reading Outdoors, and it's an old anthracite mine, and the property is fucking enormous. The guy was telling me it's 20,000 acres, and they have over 350 miles of trails. And so you get, they have like a club membership there where people go there anytime during the week. And they take, you know, trucks, off-road trucks, dirt bikes, quads, all that crap. Anything off-road they do there. and they have a campground. It's actually a really nice place. So this event was called Mudfest, and it was like an all weekend type thing. And we were the first band on Friday night playing. So they're having bands every night. And we started playing, they had a dude before us who played acoustic guitar, and he was singing like rock and country songs. Like, he kind of reminded me of like a Chris Stapleton kind of vibe he was doing.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we got on about 8:30, and we're doing like old school. The name of the band's called Hardcover if we're on Facebook. And, we do like, it's classic metal. It's like, you know, Priest, Maiden, Sabbath, you know, Metallica, AC/DC, that kind of stuff. So that's where we were at. And, you know, it was funny. It was a bunch of grannies. They pull up and then they get in their lawn chairs and they're hanging out. I was drunk with the guys. I'm like, how long till the grannies get up and leave? You know, and we were like, you know, doing over under. And I was like, oh, 3 songs. And to our surprise, they actually stayed like 3/4 through the set. I was surprised because we were pretty fucking loud. The PA was pretty loud. And
they probably loved the music, didn't they?
they were having fun.
Yeah.
They were having fun. So, you know, we were doing like all that stuff. And I thought it was going to be nervous, but I was actually the calmest one out of everybody. I was pretty chill. And I had fun. I enjoyed it. It went really fast. You know, it was not without challenges. We played on the back of a truck, a flatbed of a truck. So it was very long and narrow. And it was like, you had to be very mindful where you were standing. You don't want to fucking fall off of that thing. You break your neck, you know, you're like 6-7 feet up.
I bet.
Yeah. So, you know, so we were all like, it was very long, but we were like kind of compressed. So, you know, it was a little challenging and, you know, we couldn't hear everybody couldn't hear everybody else really well. So. You know, it was hard to play, you know, so. But we got through it, and overall it was a good gig. It was fun.
So that was, you had 2 sets, right?
Friday and one long set, one really long set.
Wait, did you play Friday and Saturday?
No, just Friday.
Okay.
Yeah. And we played like an hour 40.
That's a long time.
Yeah, you'd think it's a long time. It went really quick.
I bet it did.
Yeah.
You know, so you went on at 8 and you were done at 9:40?
It was a little later than that. It was like 8:20-ish.
Okay.
And honestly, the biggest thing was just getting there, unpacking all the equipment, setting up, doing a sound check. And the gig was the easy part. The hard part was, you know, unpacking everything and packing up everything and getting out of there. So, you know, it was a late night. But it was fun. I enjoyed it, and it was a good time. I'm looking forward to the next gig. Hopefully, I'll be a little closer. We're playing some gig out in Anvil, which is kind of towards Lancaster in that area, Lebanon. And then we're playing Jabberjaws, which is a club in Allentown in August.
When's the Anvil gig?
July 22nd.
What is that? Is that like?
I think it's like I don't know if it's a fundraiser, and they're having a bunch of bands play. And it's kind of like an open picnic. Anybody can show up and hang out and eat food and drink. And I think it's that kind of a deal.
Well, that's great.
So, yeah. And we're also trying to set something up for July 4th, like another outdoor thing.
Now, is the Anvil gig, is that going to be longer than an hour and 40, you think?
It is. I think it's going to be closer to 2 hours, that one.
Okay. And then the Jabberjaws is two hours.
So 2 hours.
2 hours? Wow.
So we got enough material. Right now we're like about 17 songs and we're in the process of learning another 6 songs. So we got plenty of material to play.
You going to write your own stuff soon?
I have stuff written that I've been working on. I don't know if it's going to fit in the context of this band. This band is kind of a classic power metal, you know?
Uh huh.
The singer does really well with like Rob Halford and Bruce Dickinson type stuff. He's like a power metal vocalist.
Okay.
So that seems to be the style. So the stuff that I'm writing, I don't know if it's going to be. I have some songs I think that are really good for it, but I don't know if everything I'm writing is. I like a lot of classic rock, more bluesy stuff. You know, so we'll see. I have some songs that are heavy, but like not everything I'm doing is heavy. So we'll see.
Now is Are some of the other members in other bands, or is this their only band?
Yeah. The other guitarist has been in a bunch of bands. He's from the Allentown area. The bass player is from the Allentown area. The singer's from, he's kind of from the Bethlehem area. The drummer, he lives over in the Allentown area, but he's originally from Long Island. Yeah, the drummer is in another band. He's in a classic rock band called the Horseshoes and Grenades. They do more like 60s, 70s, 80s stuff.
Okay.
Classic rock. And the bass player, he was in a signed band back in the 90s. He was in a Christian rock band. And he was telling us he did gigs, festivals in front of 15,000 people.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been around a long time, the bass player. He knows everybody in the Lehigh Valley music scene. The singer knows a lot of people too.
So what do they do for their, I mean, is this their day job or do they do other?
No, everybody has regular jobs. This is for fun.
So what are you playing, like what kind of guitar you have?
I have, my main guitar that I mostly use is a Fender Strat that's kind of metal. It's got humbucker pickups, so it's a little heavier than a regular Strat. Regular Strat has single coil pickups. This is more of a metal Strat. It's got a Floyd Rose on it. It's a Mexican Strat. I got to use for about $550, and it's a great guitar. And then I also have a used Jackson, a cheapy Indonesian one that I put better pickups in, EMG pickups in it. I paid like $6 for that one. And then I also play a 7-string because we're doing some heavier stuff. We're doing like Godsmack, a few other stuff that's like, you know, really heavy. So I have an LTD, which is the ESP lower end line that's made in South Korea. That's about the most expensive one I'm using. That one I paid about $700 used. And my amp, I'm using an Orange solid state amp. Normally I like tube amps, but I've had issues. Like, you know, we rehearsed at the other guitarist's house in the Allentown area. And, you know, driving over there, I would bring my Mazda Boogie Head, which is a fucking great amp. I have a TC50, which I love. And it's all tubes, and I've had issues where on the ride over, my tubes get loose from the vibrations from driving.
Uh-huh.
And I would plug the amp in and the thing wouldn't work, and I'd be sitting there for 20 minutes fiddling with the fucking tubes, making sure they were in there tight and shit. So I said, you know what, let me get a solid-state amp. It's more reliable. It's cheaper. It's less issues. And I've just run a whole bunch of pedals through it. I have one pedal. I have a Tone X pedal, which is this pedal that where you can have amp simulations, all different kinds of amps, so I can pretty much, I have any amp I can pull up, so I go through the solid state amp, and it sounds really good. It's a good setup. It's simple, straightforward, and it works. You know, I got a wah pedal, I got a Digitech whammy pedal that I can down tune, so like some of the Sabbath stuff is tuned down a half step. You know, we're not doing Motley Crue, but if we do Motley Crue, that's a whole step down. So these pedals, what they do is they tune you down virtually through the pedal. Otherwise, you would have to bring an extra guitar and tune it down. So that's the deal. There's two of us playing guitar. We got a bass player, drummer, and singer. It's like, you know, two guitar setup, classic, you know, heavy metal setup. I have a pedal, an electroharmonics pedal, where I can do like, it sounds like keyboard sounds. So like we do Mr. Crowley. I play the intro through the pedal. And it sounds like a fucking synthesizer. It's pretty cool. I could play for you. Want to hear it?
I'm sorry. What was that?
I can play you a sample of what it sounds like. Want to hear it?
Yeah. You can play it. The excitement. Is that Mr. Crowley?
It is.
Was that from the concert?
No. That was just playing it at a rehearsal.
Wow.
But that's what it sounds really good. It sounds almost like you hear like a synth and almost like a church organ kind of.
Oh yeah, it does. Yeah. That's pretty wild. That is wild.
So I can do like Rainbow in the Dark, Dio, you know that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it gets just, it's just flexibility. I'm not a keyboard player, but being able to play parts, you know, keyboard parts is just a little bit of flexibility and stuff. So it's cool.
Wait, that's from the guitar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the guitar, what is the amp that makes it sound like a keyboard? Or is that a pedal?
It's a pedal. It's a guitar going through a pedal.
That is wild. That is.
Now they do have MIDI for guitar.
Uh huh.
It's a little more pricier. You got to get a MIDI pickup, and then you got to get a synth module. But you could do similar type of stuff with that, you know. Or you could just go get a keyboard player.
But they don't need a keyboard player. They got you now.
I can't do full keyboard parts, but you know I can do stuff. You know, some things. So it's just something, an extra layer of flexibility.
That's pretty cool. Now, did you guys do Mr. Crowley in your show?
Yeah, we did that. It was really good.
Are you posting your show on Facebook?
Yes, it's in Facebook. The name of the band is called Hardcover, one word, no spaces in between. We got sound clips. We got some rehearsal videos in there. We got some clips from the show. I'm not on Facebook, so I got off of Facebook. I deleted my account.
Yeah, I haven't been on Facebook in a while.
It's been years since I've been on there.
I think you guys going to post it to YouTube too?
We're talking about it. We probably will.
Oh, please do. I would love to see some of your stuff. I might have to go on to Facebook anyway. What's the name of the band again?
Hardcover, no space.
Hardcover. I have to. When I remember how to get
public
into Facebook.
Anybody can go on there and look at it.
That is awesome. And then the next gig is in July.
Yeah, we're trying to get something set up for the 4th, weekend of the 4th.
I hate Facebook. It makes you log in.
Yeah, I don't like Facebook either. And I'm trying to set something up for September. Over here they have a lot of the townships have community days where they have it's like a fair and they got rides and food vendors and all that crap. So the one over here is in September. I'm going to try to get on that.
I'm just curious. Did you ever think about looking into getting into Music Fest?
Actually, the guitarist, the other guitar player, knows somebody in there. We're going to try to get in there next year, I think.
Wow. I guess that's something that has to be set up a year in advance at least.
Yeah,
right?
It's way in advance. Yeah, so we're gonna try to do that. Either play as an opener for somebody else or one of the secondary stages.
That'd be cool. Now, when you played at the, in Pottsville. When you played at Potts, did you didn't have to pay admission to get into that thing, right?
No. Yeah. Well, that event, yeah, those people were paying $80 for the whole weekend.
No, you. Saying, you,
not
yourself.
No,
you were
we got
playing.
Paid. We played and we got paid.
I figured you, now did you go there early?
We got there in the afternoon and we sat up and did sound check and all that jazz.
And then did you get to see anything that was going on
Yeah, we drove down by what they call the mud pit. It's like an off-road trail with at the bottom there's a pit full of mud. So we went down there on the four-wheel drive and it wasn't horrible.
How was the weather?
It was beautiful. It was sunny and 75 degrees.
Yeah, Friday wasn't too bad here. It was Saturday, the rains started coming, and Sunday was awful, and Monday.
Yeah, it's been bone dry up here for the last month.
Oh, wow, it's been raining off and on like crazy.
Well, April was very wet, and then it just stopped, and it's been dry.
Well, that's great. It wasn't too hot then either, was it?
No, it was perfect.
That's nice.
Yeah, that gig in July, we're probably going to be roasting out there.
Yeah, I can see that.
It is what it is. It's summertime.
But you're going to have fun doing it, man. Keep
exactly.
You in shape.
It'll be a good time. Yeah. Hauling all that equipment will keep us in shape.
It's not the performing, it's the hauling that does it to you, right?
Yeah, it's workout. We're our own roadies, so.
Is your family gonna come to any of your
gigs? They'll come to some of them.
Pretty soon you'll have your own groupies.
Man, maybe Alan will show up.
There you go. He'll be taking the shirt off, throwing it up on the stage. Wild.
Yeah, good times.
That is good. Now, when you practice at home, do you record what you play and listen back to it?
Rehearsals with the whole band, we do.
Well, you do that with the whole band, right?
Yeah.
But do you do that on your, like, obviously you practice at home yourself, right?
Yeah. I used Guitar Tabs. It's one of these websites that has like, you can learn the songs, and the paid version is like $20 a year. They have tracks, backing tracks, so you can play along with while you're learning the songs. You could slow it down. It's pretty good. I use that a lot when I'm first learning the song. And then eventually I just, create a playlist on YouTube with the actual bands and I just play along.
Well, that's something. So how much do you practice? Like, would you say, do you practice daily?
Yeah, usually. Like, leading up to the gig, I was doing like an hour a day. But no, I did like half an hour maybe a day.
How long have you been playing?
What do you mean? With the band, guys? For the rest of the band?
No, you yourself. I know you had,
I started learning how to play guitar when I was like 13, 14, 15. And then I was in some bands playing guitar, and I was also in other bands playing bass. And I was in a prog band for about 10 years. But it's been about 20 years since I've actually had a gig. And so it was a long time for me.
That's great, man. You love performing in front of people?
It's fun. I had a good time. I enjoyed it.
It is. It is fun, isn't it?
Yeah, and these guys are a good bunch of guys. There's no dicks. Like, that's always been the biggest issue whenever you play with bands and stuff. There's always one asshole, usually a singer.
But not your singer now.
He's pretty good.
No, I mean, he's not an asshole.
No, everyone's cool. Everyone's cool. And it's a big deal having a group of people that you can work with that everybody gets along with. That's bigger than, I was involved in music projects where, one guy's an asshole and it ruins it.
Isn't that always the case? One guy has to be an asshole and then that's the end of it.
What's really important is finding people you can work with and get along with. That's more important. You'll improve as a player and as a group, playing. That'll come with time, but if you could find the right people, that's key.
So you have two guitarists, a bass guitarist, and drummer and singer?
Yep.
Is that it?
Classic five-piece metal. So.
Right. Oh. Do you play bass also?
Not yet with this, but we're going to do we're talking about doing The Wizard, the Sabbath song with Ozzy. And the bass player's going to play harmonica. I'm probably going to play the bass.
But you do play bass, right?
Not with the band currently, no.
No, but you, so I mean, you can play bass.
I do play bass, yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I've been bands as a bass player.
Which do you like better, guitar or bass?
Honestly, what was happening was when I was in the prog band, I was putting a lot of hours in, 2 to 3 hours a day. And I started getting symptoms of carpal tunnel syndrome. I was getting numbness from my pinky down to my elbow and the side of my hand. And I went to the specialist and he's like, you have to cut back playing. And, so I stopped playing bass for a while and, the symptoms subsided. And, since I started playing heavily again, I mostly play guitar now and I haven't had any issues. I've learned to play not so heavy, the playing bass is more physical, there's more of a stress and more muscles involved. The guitar is a lighter touch,
Okay.
So I haven't had any issues playing mostly guitar.
Nice. Wow.
But I'm willing to play on a couple of songs, so, we'll do The Wizard. Like I said, the bass player is going to be doing the harmonica part, so I'll play bass. That's my favorite Ozzy era Sabbath song, The Wizard. What's your favorite Ozzy era Sabbath song, Dan?
Man,
you seem like a War Pigs kind of guy.
You know, I did want to say War Pigs, but now if it's Black Sabbath, Ozzy Black Sabbath, I mean, I'm trying to think here. I really do like Wizard. I like Electric Eye. But yeah, I probably War Pigs is my favorite. Now Ozzy himself, just Ozzy. Man, I do really like Mr. Crowley, but
yeah,
I also
the first two solo albums of Rainy Roads are phenomenal. Those are masterpieces.
You know, Flying High and
oh, that's good.
Gosh, man, that whole Bark of the Moon album I just love. And it's hard to pick.
I do like the Dio era stuff a lot. I think I actually like the music a little better. Like there were better players at that point. You know? Some people are diehard Ozzy people though, you know. But I'm a huge Dio fan too.
But
and we are playing one. We're doing Children of the Sea, which is off Heaven and Hell, which is a great song.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest. My dad was dead set against rock music. For some
reason.
That was
one of those, huh?
Yeah. So I grew up listening to Conway Twitty and the Oak Ridge Boys.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. Don't get me wrong, I love country music. I'm a huge fan of like Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson. That stuff is great, you know?
No, we're not talking like the cool country music here, okay? We're talking like I said.
Wait.
Conway Twitty and the Oak Ridge Boys and my parents loved the Platters and I mean, it was decent. I mean, it was good music, but like, no way was Black Sabbath coming into our house until like, I was like, I could go out and buy it on my own. Or when my parents did the foster kids, some of that stuff came in there and I was able to listen to it. So my musical exposure was greatly stunted as a kid until I was in my like mid to late teens. So. Like I got started, which is unfortunate because man, I love it.
Yeah, I have an older brother, and I used to listen to a lot of his music.
Like it's taken me a long time to actually get like into or exposed to. Oh come on, why can't I even think like Rob Halford's band, Judas Priest. Like, yeah. I love Judas Priest. And I'm like, Priest why don't I listen to Judas Priest more? It's just, you know, once you get past like your teenage years into your like early adult and then life takes over and the next thing you know, you got kids and they don't want to listen to Judas Priest or whatever. It's just something I never had the opportunity to get into until recently. And you know, love and Rainbow and a lot of Dio stuff I'm really enjoying these days.
That's great.
You know, just going back and listening to a lot of stuff. I've been it's been mostly like Queen and Alice Cooper and stuff.
Yeah, I grew up on classic rock. You know, I was young in the 70s, and I got into a lot of those 70s bands. You know, the 70s were the golden age of, you know, rock music, classic rock. And I grew up listening to all that stuff, you know, the Stones and the Beatles and the Who and Led Zeppelin. Queen, you know, all that stuff. Kansas, you know, Rush, you know,
Boston,
yeah. Kiss, you know, Alice Cooper, you know, AC/DC, all that stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I do listen to a lot of metal these days. When I get the chance to listen to music, metal and. Like most of my music listening these days ends up being on Sirius when I'm driving around in the car, and it's either Ozzy's Boneyard or hair metal, or I like a lot of Lithium.
You know, like hair metal, you know, any genre, there's some bands that are better than others.
Yeah. Sure.
Like Rat was very good from that. I like the first couple of Motley Crue albums. I love the first three Def Leppard albums, you know.
Yeah, but, yeah, I hear what you're saying. But then my daughter wants to play her music, and she's into...
Oh, these kids are into this pop stuff. It's garbage, a lot of it.
She's into Weird Al and
oh, that's cool.
Musicals. She's listening to a lot of musicals.
Is he still porn Weird Al?
Oh, my God. He comes around here about once a year, and the tickets are like... I'm like, geez, they're like $100 and some.
That's a lot.
And I'm like, I like Weird Al, but not at that price.
Yeah.
So yes,
the Wood Creek over here, that venue is super expensive. It's like more expensive. The tickets on average are like $100 a pop.
For where?
I haven't been to Wind Creek, where the casino is in Bethlehem.
Oh, Wind Creek.
The old Sands.
Yes, yes.
I haven't been to any shows there because it's so fucking expensive. It's like, I usually wind up going and seeing shows at like, you know, at, the Prue Center in Newark or, you know, Wells Fargo in Philly or, you know, something in New York.
What about the Poke? Is it still called the Poconos or whatever it was?
Which one?
I think it's right outside of, it's somewhere between Lehighton and Wilkes-Barre. Pocono Mountain? Or, there used to be a venue Magic, out there.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. I know. You got Magic Mountain. You got, whatchamacallit, the other place. I forget. Yeah, so I saw a show there recently. I saw Dokken and, Lynch Mob.
That's not
a big old barn.
That's not too badly priced, is it?
No, that place is really reasonable. I think I paid $30 for the tickets.
Yeah. Awesome. Cause I think, the Wind Creek, that's, how many different concert halls do they have at that?
There's
casino.
A couple venues. The indoor venues, the expensive one. That one's like the $100 tickets. But then they have like an outdoor venue. They have like free shows there sometimes, and that's pretty cool.
Okay, because I know like when my dad died, we were going out there cleaning out the house. Paige and I saw Hollywood Vampires at the casino, and I think it was Wind Creek. Yeah, which would make sense, because then I know why I keep getting emails from Wind Creek about events. And I'm like, where the fuck is Wind Creek? And they're like,
yeah, it's the old Sands Casino. Probably.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, yeah. And it wasn't $100 back then,
but it's crazy now. Like, I like Daryl Hall, All in Oats, and he's playing there, and I looked at the tickets, and they're like, the cheapest ticket's like $80-something. It's too much.
Oh my goodness.
I'm not going out for that. I want to see it, but not that much.
Yeah, because I got tickets to go see the Freaks on tour, I think it's called, with Alice Cooper and Rob Zombie. And so that's at the Virginia Beach Amphitheater, which I don't think is called Virginia Beach Amphitheater anymore. But they have the seating section, and then towards the back they have the lawn.
It's kind of like the PNC.
And so the lawn seats were like $30 or something like that. And then that's just like general admission in the lawn. You just sit on the grass or whatever. But if you wanted to like get actually down in the seats, you're talking like the cheap seats were like $100 and some. And then down around front row, it was like thousands of dollars. And I'm like, who the hell can afford that?
Dude, I saw Maiden at the Prue Center in Newark back in last fall, like last October. And I had like, there weren't nosebleeds, but I was in like the lower portion of the upper section. And they were like $40-something those tickets, so it wasn't bad.
Yeah, that's what it was when I went to Bristol to see Maiden. And, you know, the seats we were in weren't that, they were like you said, that $40, but they weren't that far away. And I mean, it was still, you could see everything.
Yeah, it's decent and it's not great.
But, you know, you want to get any closer than that, you might as well take a mortgage out on your house.
The floor, you're probably spending $80 a head.
Yeah, I love to go to concerts, but can't afford it anymore.
Yeah, it's getting nuts. Metallica's insane. they're doing this tour this summer where they're only playing like in a dozen cities. They're going to stadiums and it's super expensive. I'm like, I want to go see them again, but not that much. Sorry.
Holy moly.
Too expensive.
Now I took Paige to see Andrew W.K. And it was wild because it was just him in a small venue. It was called Shakers. And it was like going into a bar and he was playing on the stage on the bar. I mean, it was so like small and intimate. I was surprised that he actually came through there. But now those tickets were like $30 or something like that. That was something. But the, you know, $100 and some to even get like third tier seats.
I'm on the list from Ticketmaster and they had some shows where they weren't sellouts. They were like $20-$25 tickets. So I wound up getting tickets for, you remember that show Metalocalypse, you know, the animated show?
Yes.
The guys that do the music. You know, they're touring as Death Clock. That was the name of the band in the show. So they're doing that.
Okay.
They got that Japanese girl metal band, Baby Metal, opening for them. So it was $25 tickets. I'm like, yeah, what the fuck?
That was a good concert though, wasn't it?
I haven't gone yet.
Oh, okay. When is it?
I think it's in September.
Where is it?
They're playing at that place outside of Philly. I'll tell you. Hold on a sec. The Man Theater.
Okay, Man
it's
Theater.
It's outdoors. I've never seen a show there.
I don't think I've ever gone to a show there either, but that's been around for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's at least 20 years.
Remember the Trocadero? I think that's what it was called.
No.
Wait, did you live in the area? You lived in Long Island in the 80s and
Staten Island growing up.
Staten Island in the 80s.
I've been over here for about 22 years.
Okay, I think yeah. So that was a venue down in Philly that, gosh, I think a lot of punk bands in particular came through there. It was pretty popular, but I think that closed down maybe in the 90s. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't been to Philly a whole bunch of times, but the one place I do remember going to was the Met.
Okay. Now, in the Lehigh Valley, there used to be Lupo's and Airport Music Hall. That used to have, like, Guar used to come through the Airport Music Hall.
I don't know if that place is still around.
And no, it's not. That closed down a long time ago. And then
the place that's still pretty popular is the Gin Mill. That's a decent sized place.
The Gin Mill. Let me see, where is the Gin Mill?
Yeah, and then you also got the State Theater in Easton. I saw Joe Bonamassa there.
I saw Weird Al at State Theater.
Yeah, it's a good venue.
Oh, wait a second. The Gin Mill. Is this what I think it is? Or where I think it is?
Northampton.
Oh, it's in Northampton?
I think so.
Oh, it's not where I think it is. Wait. Okay, all right. I was thinking maybe it was what there was a place. So you know where AT&T used to be? I guess it's the baseball field now.
Right, the Coca-Cola Park.
Coca-Cola Park. There used to be a concert venue back there, on that road that goes back, like right before you go over the Tillman Street Bridge, there's a road that goes back and connects up to, Catasauqua, I think, out there. There used to be a concert venue back there. I saw, like, the Ramones and Blue Oyster Cult, Weezer there.
Cool.
But that closed down.
The Ramones, their set was like a half hour long, 35 minutes.
Yeah, something like that.
Because all the songs are 2 minutes long.
Yeah. They played all their catalog in a half hour.
35 minutes.
Yeah. But that was, man, I think
they're
after
awesome show.
That, please. What's that?
The Ramones are fucking awesome.
Yeah, they were great. They were great. It was a fun show. It was a very welcoming show. Like, people were so nice, you know, at that show compared to like GWAR.
Oh my God. Dude, yes. You want to know the most evil fucking show I ever went to that was out of control?
Was that?
I saw the Cro-Mags at this place in New York. This has got to be like early 90s, like 90, 91.
Okay.
And the Cro-Mags are a weird band. They track like punk skinheads, and they also track like hardcore metal people. And there was two different crowds there, and a huge brawl broke out at the show, and it was fucking out of control brawl. People were like getting cut and smashed, or smashing bottles and cutting each other and shit. It was out of control. I was with my friends, and we were like, let's get the fuck out of here. And sure enough, as we're getting out of there, the cops are coming and raiding the place and shutting the shit off.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. It got really close to that when I went, was at the GWAR it would have been early 90s. Yeah. When I went to see GWAR at the, no, it would have been 89, I think.
Yeah. The original guy died, right?
The guy
Maximus.
Who plays. Yeah. Odorous Urungus. The lead singer, dude, yeah, they found him dead in his cot. Yeah, he died. Although I think the bass player is still the same. He might still be the original. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't followed GWAR in a while. But, good times. Now, my wife used to work. Like when she graduated college, she had a degree, her English degree. She worked for a magazine called Pro Sound News, I believe it was. And
sounds familiar.
She would go to all these concerts out there in New York and like afterwards interview the members of the bands and stuff about the equipment that they use and everything. So she got to see a ton of concerts out there and go backstage and hobnob with the bands and stuff. So she's got a lot of wild stories. Well, not wild. She's just meeting them. Pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. I went to Seton Hall for 2 years and, WSOU is the radio station there. And I was friends with a bunch of those people, and we used to go to a lot of shows through them.
That's something.
Yeah, I went to one show, Kix, and I got to hang out with them. They were really nice guys.
Is that KIX?
Yeah, the guys from Maryland.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're retiring soon. They're almost done, those guys.
Man, you know what floors me is the Scorpions are still going.
They retired. I saw them in the fall.
Oh, they did? They've retired now?
Yeah, they retired, yeah.
Oh, man, I'm bummed out. I thought they were still going.
They're great. No, they're done. That was the last tour I saw back in November. That was the farewell tour.
Wait, they had a show on March 16th.
Oh, I don't know.
Mickey D tour kit.
Yeah, Mickey D, the drummer. That's the guy that played Motorhead and King Diamond.
Yeah.
He's with them. He's good, that guy.
Oh, yeah. I don't see any upcoming Wait a minute. So I guess, are the Scorpions not playing anymore? It's just him?
They retired, yeah.
So Mickey D's just going on?
Mickey D was the last drummer with them.
Wow.
Yeah, they were always great, the Scorpions. I saw them a few times. They're always pros. Those guys could do it in their sleep.
Motley Crue's going around again too, right?
I don't want to see money. It's all recorded. It's all recorded tracks.
How many farewell concerts have they had now?
I don't know. But they don't even play live music anymore. It's all recorded tracks.
Yeah, I know. I heard about that. Oh, and they're feuding with Mick Mars.
Yeah, it's getting ugly.
That's a shame. Like, why did it have? Why does it have to be like
that? He was the best guy. He was the one dude who actually fucking knew how to play.
What a shame. Yeah. Oh. Oh well. Oh, it's getting late, man. Wait, you're looking forward to what?
Seeing Maiden again.
Are you going?
Well, they haven't really. I think they're only doing a couple North American dates this year. I think they're not going to come back really until next winter, like January, February. But if they do, I'd be into coming down there and come and see a show. You're more than welcome to come up here and see a show.
Hey, let me see here. Trying to think. I thought it must have been a couple months ago. I think they were close by again. Yeah, you're right. I don't really see anything in the United States.
They haven't announced anything. There's a couple dates, I think, at the end of the year. I think Vancouver.
Yeah, Indio, California. LA,
but just a couple dates, but they're supposed to, I think, after Christmas, tour heavy in the U.S. again.
Oh, that's good. Is AC/DC still? They're still touring.
Not
they?
Really. They came out with a new album recently, but they haven't toured. Brian Johnson's voice is shot from what I'm hearing.
Wait a minute. October 7th. Hold on. Holy crap. If you're in California, India, California, Indio, it looks like Friday the 6th of October you can see Iron Maiden, and then the 7th you can see AC/DC, which is
that's some festival out there, I think.
There is a festival that Iron Maiden's going to be at.
Yeah, they're only doing a couple of shows in the U.S.
Yeah,
towards the end of the year.
That's the only thing listed under AC/DC's tour. They're getting old, we'll man.
Oh yeah, they retirement. They're in their 70s. Those guys, AC/DC.
Time to enjoy
getting
their
older
money.
Too. They're in their 60s. Those guys, they're pushing. I know someone who knows Nico McBurney. Lives in Florida, the Tampa area.
Uh huh.
He's friendly with them, and they're getting up there. So if you got a shit, you know, you're gonna have limited opportunities to see them again.
No, they should enjoy their time.
Take advantage while you can.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna wrap us up here.
Alrighty.
It's good stuff, man. I'm glad that you had a great concert.
Yeah, it was fun.
And man, your kids are done with school, or yeah, they're out.
My college age son, he's a freshman. He just finished, and my high school younger guy, he's got like another week.
This next week is the last full week of school. It's weird, is because next week is their last full week of school, and then they have one more day on Monday, that following Monday, and then they're done. It's like, why are they going to school on a Monday for the last day? It's really weird.
Yeah, it's a bit of a waste.
But whatever. All right. You have a great week, my friend. And
you too, Dan. Take
stay
care.
Safe.
Enjoy.
Thanks a lot. It's great hearing about your stuff. I look forward to seeing and hearing some of the clips, man.
Yeah.
So I'm going to see if I can get it on Facebook.
See if I can get on Facebook.
But
know when we get put the YouTube going.
Yeah, definitely. And what's the name of the band again?
It's called Hardcover.
Hardcover. That's right. All right. Thanks a lot, man. You have a great week.
You too. Take care.
I'll see you in a couple days.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community.
If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, and that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue.